Hey, all you pet stylists, you found the Groom Pod. Welcome to our virtual salon. My name is Susie, and I'm your host. I'm a mobile groomer from Seattle, Washington, and anyone who knows me will tell you I love to talk, especially about my job. One of my favorite people to talk to is my friend and mentor and star of the show from Tucson, Arizona, and groomblog.blogspot.com, Miss Barbara Bird.
Hello, groomers. Hi, Susie. What's up?
Howdy doody, fresh and fruity, happy Pride Day. Welcome to episode 213 of the Groom Pod, recorded on June 30th, 2019 in Snohomish, Washington and Tucson, Arizona. This podcast is brought to you by listener support through Amazon and Patreon, and through our kind sponsors, Best Shot Show Season and Evolution Shears. This week on the Groom Pod, we're going to talk about using human products, micellar water, and rebooking. Barbara, what's new this week?
Oh, I had a hard week, and I had a little unusual incident. I got bit, Susie.
Oh, no!
Yeah, and I, you know, not nipped. It was not a nippy. It was definitely a wound, a bite right on my knuckle of my left hand, my holding hand. And it was a Cairn Terrier, Seamus, one of my regulars that I've been doing for years and years. In fact, Seamus is the Cairn that I used on my YouTube video many years ago. And now he gets clipped down with a five blade all over. And I had him muzzled and hooked up to the groomer's helper, I thought securely, but I was going to reach for his foot to trim around it and etc., and he just slipped out of everything so quickly. He just pawed off the with his other hand, he pawed off the muzzle and turned around and nailed me.
Darn it.
I just didn't have him tight enough. The groomer's helper itself was tight enough, but the other tie was not that tight to the pole. I slammed down my scissors.
Yeah, I bet.
And cursed. I did not strike the dog. And but you know what? My body went into a stress response that was like unfamiliar to me.
Yeah.
I got like intestinal upset and dizziness and weird out of whackness, probably partly due to that it's way too hot in my shop.
How long did it last? Did it go all day?
Well, yeah, you know, I had abdominal cramping for hours. I was just miserable. I was so, and then I was miserable that I was miserable.
You know, right.
Like, what the heck? You know, like, grow a pair, girl. Get up. Go on. You know, like, I'm thinking, this isn't me. I don't just, like, wimp out. You know, but I wimped out, and then I hated myself for being such a wimp.
You beat yourself up over that. So how bad was the bite?
Well, you know, I cleaned it right away. It's still tender. I don't know.
So it looks, it's a collision. Did the tooth puncture into you a little bit?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it punctured and ripped.
Yeah.
It wasn't just a single. It ended up being kind of a half moon shaped wound. I guess it ripped because I jerked it.
Yeah, of course you did. Oh. Jeez, surprise. So maybe it could have been avoided, but maybe not. Just one of those things.
You know, it's one of those things. You know, this is an older, overweight terrier. Terriers do this. You know, it's in their genes to use their mouth. It's in their genes. And he's always been somewhat mouthy. But it's just escalated and become more serious as he's become more old and uncomfortable with his own weight. And this is an owner that just gets offended if I say anything about the dog's weight or if I weigh him. And interestingly enough, she is battling with a weight gain.
No surprise there.
No surprise there, but so...
Interesting that you should point that aspect out, because I have some neighbors here who have two extremely overweight huskies that are aging. Their dogs got overweight. They obviously had an issue somewhere along the line, because all of a sudden, I see them walking those dogs three times a day, a mile each time. They're walking those dogs, either both of them, or one of them is walking both dogs, or they're walking each dog individually, but they're out there making a difference, and those people are height-weight proportionate. They're doing it. They're out there making a difference in their dogs that they obviously overloved. I use the quotation marks, you know, and they got heavy. So if you've got a weight problem, maybe your dog might have a weight problem. Maybe you should look at that. You can't look at your own. Look at the dog.
I think the two are often, but not necessarily, correlated.
Yeah. So what did he say when you told him that you got nipped?
She.
Oh, it's a woman. Sorry.
She said, oh, yeah, he bit me, too.
Oh, no.
And you know what? He bit her bad, and she had a little scar on her hand because she tried to lift his paw to take a sticker out. And so, you know, the dog now has huge feet issues, and I see it as directly related to the weight, because when these dogs get heavy and arthritic, they don't want to lift a single paw. They want all four feet on the ground because they're bracing themselves in such a way that it's just really uncomfortable for them to have one paw lifted. And, you know, I already knew from before that I just can never do his toenails again.
Well, this reminds me that I've got to get that hammock sent to you that I've got. And this is kind of a funny story that I can roll into the what happened this week. My old hammock set aside for you, right? But yeah. I want to send you the comb brush, except I don't want to let it go.
So you like it.
It has a specific place. It's not a comb, it's a brush. But it's a very agile, tiny encourager of shedding while you're blow drying the hair. Like I can go in there and I can go, come on, baby, come on. And those hairs will release with this neat little canicular comb brush thingy. So I found a spot for it and I'm like, dang, I got to send that out. But I got this golden retriever butt coming up. I need to encourage that hair out.
Well, hang on to it. Why don't you contact them and suggest that they send me one.
I will. I will tell her this exact story, how I keep meaning to send it to you, and I can't.
Tell her that I have a clientele of coated dogs that you might not encounter.
Yes. Plus, you're my co-host, and it'll be easier for us to talk it up.
Yeah. So we'll cover a wider range of coat types and coat situations if she would send me one.
I mean, I even have the hammock in the envelope in my bag that I carry with me when I work, and I still have not mailed it away because I just keep looking at the brush. So I'll get that in the mail, because the hammock that I'm sending you is perfect Karen Terrier size. You'll need Yvonne's help getting the dog in the hammock the first few times because it's a little unwieldy at first. I can do them myself. I can even do the dogs who try to step out the minute I put their other foot in the hammock. You know, you put one foot in and then they pull the other foot out, and then you put that foot in and they pull that out.
With Seamus, there's going to be the problem of how do I touch the foot to get it into the hole in the hammock.
I usually work the hammock underneath the foot because eventually they'll pick the foot up if you're pushing against it, and then you just have it step down in the hole. And then I also then immediately take the chain and hook that side up so they can't get back out of the hole. That's the trick.
I guess another way that occurs to me would be to hold the animal up, lay the hammock down, put him down into the 2 feet holes, and then drop the back end into the back end and pull the hammock up. I might try that too.
Yeah, I do that.
Then you don't have to actually fool around with any particular foot. There's not a weight issue because if you allow him to plant both front feet, he's going to stay there.
Yes, and if you release your chains from your lips, right, and drop your longer chains down so that you've got chains that are hanging way down, then you just hook it up after you get his two front feet put in, then hook the other side of the hammock up and put that up, even though the back end is still laying down and open. Then you lift his back end up and set it in the holes, pick up the two sides, hook him up, and lift that end up. And then, because he's heavy, you can work him up like this. Yeah. But
you know, something else occurred to me. You said about chains. I got to tell you, I had a peeve. Came up just, you know, like sometimes things that you're in your work annoy you over and over again, and you don't really see it as a crisis until it reaches a certain meltdown point. And you know, the heat in my shop is our meltdown point, literally.
Yes.
So I have all of these links and hooks and links from my lip system. I have two lip systems going in two different rooms, and I have pieces of chain link all over the place. And I almost never can put my hands on a three-piece chain to hook up the rear end support. I have them. I just can't locate them because they get used as single pieces. And you know, like what has happened is that everything has gotten shuffled and attached and unattached. So what I'm going to do, I realized that what I have to do, I've got the pegboard, I've got hooks, and each size chain is going to have a hook and a place for it.
Great idea.
So I'm going to have, because I'm no longer willing to like, oh, that one's not long enough. No, this one's not, you know, and just be fumbling around with chains and links and being pissed off at employees.
Yeah, that's no good. So I also had kind of an exciting week. Adventures in mobile grooming is what happened. I love my job. I love my job. I love my job. I like to think on my feet. You know, I like to get challenged in that way sometimes. Not always when it's an emergency, but sometimes it makes you feel good after you make it through the situation. So the long story is I finally got my big Explorer back. It has been in the shop since February, actually since January, but I got it back for 5 days in the in-between when the transmission wasn't fixed and I had to give it back to them. But it went from the transmission shop here locally to Oregon. So I'm in Washington, went to the Washington, Snohomish, Washington transmission place. They sent the transmission down to Oregon to be rebuilt in one shop because it's a complicated transmission. It came back up. It didn't work. They sent it back down. It came back up. It didn't work again. They came up. They picked up my entire Explorer with the transmission, took it down to Oregon. Then it went to two different transmission shops and finally a dealership in Oregon where they were able to get a transmission in, but also blew the computer to my car and had to replace that in the interview. So I have been without my comfortable Explorer, and I've been using, so that Explorer I call Fancy. That's the Fancy Explorer. It's loaded. It's got everything. The other Explorer is the little Explorer that could, because it's got like 240,000 towing miles. It's a two-door 1998 Explorer. It shouldn't even be running, and yet we keep piecing it together. So I just am like so grateful to have the second Explorer, but I had been driving it since February, and I just wanted the big fancy one with the heated seats and all of the bells and whistles. So finally Tuesday, it's back, and I drive it Tuesday and Wednesday without anything hooked up, and it's fantastic. It's working great. I'm so thrilled to have my Explorer back. I have to work Thursday morning, and I've got my rent-a-dog here. So I hook up the Explorer to the trailer. I unhook the little Explorer that could, hook the fancy Explorer up to the trailer, and I visually do an inspection, check everything. Everything looks good. Nothing unusual. And I head out to work. Now we've got a quarter of a mile driveway and it's bumpy and I'm driving out the driveway and everything seems fine. I am driving to my first appointment. The sun is shining. The birds are chirping and I'm happy as can be because I really do seriously love my job. And now I've got my car back and I'm thrilled. I've got my little rent-a-dog next to me in the car seat. She's all strapped in. Off we go. So I get on the freeway, I drive along at 65 miles an hour, I get off the freeway and I head over to the first stop, and at the bottom of the hill, I can literally see the house at the top of the hill. I pull over to let some cars behind me pass. I hit a bump and my trailer unhitches from the trailer hitch. The part of the trailer hitch that has the ball that slides into the receiver, I call it the stinger, had lost its pin somewhere along the line. Now, I visually saw the pin at my house. What I didn't see is the little fastener that goes into the side because it's underneath and I can't really see it. I didn't know that it wasn't in there or that it was in there badly. What I imagine happened is somewhere along the line, someone walked past my Explorer 1,000 times and hit their shins on my trailer hitch because it's a dropped hitch. So it sticks out a little bit farther and you bang against it. So they probably pulled the hitch and stuck it in the back of the Explorer. Then when they returned the Explorer to me, 4 different shops, no way to tell who it was, they put it back on but didn't get that pin seated correctly. The trailer hitch popped out with the hitch still attached to the trailer, so no damage there. The chains, however, are still attached to the Explorer. So I rear-ended myself at 30 miles an hour with the trailer. The hitch... Fuck. Receiver rectangle, or the little square box, poked a hole in my license plate all the way through to the inside of my car where my generator sits. My generator with the gas. So it smashed the entire tailgate in, but it never damaged the interior of the car. It really didn't hit the generator. And it doesn't look like it hit the frame of the car, just the tailgate. But there I was on the side of the road, my client's house blocks away. A generator stop, of course. The whole back end caved in of my Explorer. And the chains are hooked up, but the receiver is not in the hitch anymore. So look, I'm looking around. I'm trying to think fast. I am off to the side of the road. I'm in the clear, so cars are going by. I'm sure they're looking at me like crazy because the hitch is just the trailer's chained to the car, but not in the hitch. And a guy pops over, and he helps me unhook the chains by leaning on the trailer tongue, and then the trailer pops up backwards. So now the trailer's sitting on its door backwards up at an angle. The people are driving past looking at me. It looks like a circus. I've got my Explorer around the corner and I'm looking for the pin, and the pin is nowhere to be seen. But there's no damage on the receiver and there's no damage to the trailer. Unfortunately, I'm on a slight hill and I cannot get the little trailer wheel chocks out of the back of the trailer because it's on the door. So I have to leave the trailer, drive to a parts store, buy a pin, and then come back with chocks as well, chalk up the tire, somehow get the hitch, the trailer down to level and back onto the hitch and get home. Meanwhile, I call the insurance company. I call my client. I tell them what's happening. She's older than God. And she's like, does that mean you're not coming? Yeah, that means I'm not coming. So I ran to the parts store and I got the parts I needed and I threw my 140 pounds onto the end of that trailer and I righted it by myself. I picked it back up. I know, but it's pretty well balanced and there's like 600 pounds of water behind the axle, but the tongue is so much farther out that I was able to get it down. I hooked it back up. I towed it home and now I'm sitting here with a conundrum. I can't do my generator stops. I can do generator stops that are just a house with not enough power because it's the summer and I can dry with one of the 2 K9 dryers, right? I just flip one switch instead of 2. But my assisted livings where I can't get near a power outlet or my apartment buildings, I can't do them. So forced vacation and rescheduling to be done. But what an exciting thing. And I have a $500 deductible, so it is costing me that. But I was so grateful that my rent-a-dog was in her very well set up car seat so that she didn't slam forward when that trailer hit us in the back. Wow. Holy moly. So I've called everybody and let them know that I can't do the generator stops. And I'll keep all the rest of them. And of course, it's 4th of July weekend, so I will not be able to get it fixed until after the holiday, I'm sure. So I'm without the generator for a while. I do have a massive household generator that I got at Costco. If I can fit it into the little Explorer that could, I might be back in business, but I haven't tried to lift it up there because it's 150 pounds. That's a we'll see situation.
So how do you normally work with the littler vehicle?
I have the littler generator that's trapped in the big Explorer. It's trapped. I can't open the tailgate. And if I do get it open and can't close it, I'm completely screwed with weather. It'll get wet and I'll have a tailgate sticking up in the air. So no, I can't get it out and I can't use it. I can see it. It's full of gas. It's ready to go, but I can't get to it. But it's okay. It'll be fine. I can work with it. I can also offer people who are in the apartment building / assisted living. Some of those guys still drive. They could actually drive to me at one of my local clients who will let me use their power, because everybody says, oh, just pull in front of the house, plug in as usual, and you can do other people's dogs. So I've got options. I just don't have a ton of options.
Yeah, your customers, you have a good customer base.
They're all feeling my pain, though, because they've watched me drive the little Explorer that could for so long, and they keep asking, when are you going to get the other Explorer? When are you going to get your big Explorer?
I know, like, come on.
It's crazy. Hey, should we do a podcast?
Hey, let's go.
I mean, one that talks about grooming?
Maybe we could. We did talk about grooming. We talked about my guy getting bit.
Well, that's true.
Important part of grooming.
True. Very true. Okay, let's take a quick break, and then we're going to come back with our very first subject, which is human products, and do we use them or not? The controversy continues.
You know, groomers, your salon runs on shampoo and conditioner, and what you choose to bathe with can make or break the quality of your work, productivity, your health, and even your career. Sure, there's a ton of shampoo lines to choose from, but if you haven't tried Best Shots Innovative Systems, you may be working too hard. You owe it to yourself to check out bestshotpet.com. Discover firsthand why so many groomers rely on their trusted mastery of coat care chemistry. That's bestshotpet.com. Learn more about using their 3-step system and how Best Shot mindfully formulates using advanced grooming technologies, combining the very best nature and science has to offer. Whether it's their 3-step system, the one-shot odor annihilator, Ultramax Pro line, MED skin treatments, or the amazingly aromatic and fun Sentiment Spa collection, Best Shot has something tailored just for groomers that really works. For over 25 years, Best Shot has lived up to its claim to get dirty jobs done right, so you can start making masterpieces out of nightmares in record time. What are you waiting for? Contact your favorite distributor or catalog and get some Best Shot today. I love them.
Ready, groomers? Here comes our first appointment. And it is a big controversy, isn't it, this human products thing? It's a controversy, but is it a whole lot of brouhaha for nothing?
Well, I just have to own my bias on this one. And my bias is that it is a lot of brouhaha about nothing. Because almost all of our products, cleansing products, have been formulated and evolved following human products. So there's just really not any class of ingredients or any specific ingredients that would exist in human products that should not be in pet products. It's just like it's not that big a deal. It's just that companies have made products for pets that they market for pets, and they freak out if we're using other stuff from the other aisle.
What is some of the stuff that you've used? I've got some stuff that I use daily that I cannot and will not live without. Two things come to mind immediately. One of them is baby wipes. I use human baby wipes. I'm not going to buy those little packages of dog baby wipes that are so expensive when I can buy hypoallergenic human baby wipes from Costco, and they work perfectly fine. The other thing that I use on a daily basis are the bath bombs that I get at the dollar store. There's nothing in them. They're bath bombs, so the ingredients may come from a different country. It's still just a bath bomb. It's still just bicarbonate of soda and citric acid and maybe a little color or fragrance. Those are two of the things that I can't see as being any different in the human versus the pet industry. But there's other stuff too. There's Dawn, there's detanglers, there's mousse, there's hairspray, there's color, all of these things that we use daily, or at least that I use quite often, that are not marketed for pets.
Well, I'm with you with the baby wipes, and that was a question that was brought up on the GroomPod discussion group this week. I think that there's really not significant difference between pet wipes and human wipes. I think what you might want to be aware of is fragrance, because there's usually or often a lot more fragrance in human products than in pet products. It's stronger fragrance. It's not necessarily bad or wrong or anything, but you might not want as much fragrance in a pet wipe as you would have in a human wipe, although some people love a heavier fragrance even.
She says.
One of the features of, like, there are whole lines of shampoos that are marketed for their fragrance for dogs.
Yeah.
You know, the Le Pooch makes a big deal about their fragrance, and they're more heavily fragranced. In other words, there seems to be a little greater percentage of fragrance in the Le Pooch products, and in the Isle of Dogs, that's another whole line of dog products that are made with more noticeable fragrance and more sophisticated fragrance. It used to be that fragrances for pet products were real one-dimensional. Like, you just had, like, coconut or lime, or you didn't have coconut lime verbena.
Right.
You had one or the other. You know, they were just, like, very one-dimensional, very almost childlike, right? If I could say so. Almost childlike, almost like kitty fragrances. But now companies have become aware of the humans who own the dogs can like the more sophisticated fragrances and more noticeable fragrances. I tend to lean a little bit away from fragrances. It's not that I want to go totally fragrance-free. I don't. I want my dogs to smell good, but they don't have to be a room deodorizer.
I have learned I take a full survey on how fragrant they want, and I use the walking room deodorizer as an extreme from one end, and then the other end is nothing, and where do you fall in between? And people always think that's pretty funny. So certainly fragrance is one of those things. Is concentration another one? Maybe concentration of product would be more concentrated for a dog, like say in a shampoo, than it would be for a human shampoo, where a human shampoo would be a more diluted product, ready to use?
Well, ready to use. I think it's true that pet products that are made to sell by the gallon and made for commercial use usually are marketed with a dilution value, like 10 to 1, 16 to 1, you know, and human products are not. However, human shampoos are dilutable. They just haven't told us that yet.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So I think there is a matter of concentration, and that your commercial products that suggest dilution are usually a little bit more. But it's not as much of a difference as you might suspect. It's not as much of a thing. And I really don't see any reason not to use baby wipes in the salon. I've used them forever. You know, you just like never know when you're going to have a little like anal gland upset or something like that, right? You need to have those things. And yes, they're good to clean ears and
bottoms,
so on and so forth. Yeah, bottoms. Right. Yeah,
so oftentimes the human industry, as we on the GroomPod talk about often, is ahead of us in the research department, often and always in the ingredient list department. So using a human product, you get a full ingredient list on it because they have to put it on it. And you may get some research that's more advanced than the research that's happening in the human product lines. That's a benefit maybe to occasionally be looking in the human product lines. Yeah. Sometimes if you're in a pinch, availability of human products can help you out when you need something.
Yeah, you know, I've used, in a pinch, I've used Minty Listerine mouthwash as an ear cleaner. The original Listerine that contains the herbals in it. You know, it's not that big a deal. I've used it as a finishing rinse for like Labradors.
It leaves them minty fresh.
They're usually a little on the acidic side, so that leaves them shiny and, you know. But I wouldn't recommend doing that on a day-to-day basis. But there's sometimes when you need, that's one of the reasons for getting to know your ingredients and being able to substitute on an improvise in a pinch. You know, because if you understand the ingredients of your pet product, then you can make a substitution that's going to give you about the same results as what you were getting with the pet stuff.
The dog show people used to use human products all the time.
Oh, yeah. You know, like, because there were decades of grooming for shows before we had a decent selection of pet-specific shampoos and hair products. Decades. There, you know, when I first started grooming in early 70s, there were very few really good pet shampoos. And some of those pet shampoos were like really rough. they were good cleansers, but they were really rough and tough on hair. And those people who were showing their dogs on a regular basis and bathing their dogs weekly, they were using people products. You know, Pantene was the Pantene shampoo. There are still show people that are rigidly attached to using their Pantene shampoo for show preparation. Pantene has that good D-panthenol in it. That's a body fire and moisturizer, good ingredients. And Pantene built their whole line around that ingredient. So finally, you know, like 20, 30 years later, we find Pantene now in lots of pet shampoos.
Right.
Finally, it made its way as an, what are we going to do to break this Pantene shampoo addiction? We'll use some Pantene in our stuff.
Yeah, and it'll catch those groomers' eyes who remember. So there's always talk when these human products being used for pet purposes come up of the reasons why you might not want to use a human labeled product for pets. And litigation tends to be the one that you worry about or that comes up the most. I don't know that we worry about it because I don't know how many people are going to actually go after you for a dog's reaction because you used an off-label use on a human product, but it is possible. And certainly as our shampoos develop and we get more options, we don't have to use the other products, but I think that I wouldn't hesitate from trying some of those human products if you're interested.
You know, I'm not a lawyer, and I can't say for sure, but I don't see how you could be successfully sued for, like, using Dawn dish soap on a greasy cocker that had a reaction or something. I mean, what's going to happen? Worst thing that happens usually with grooming products are sensitivity reactions or irritations. And it's not a suable, it's rarely a life-threatening situation.
Right.
You know where it's life-threatening is with a, I almost used a swear word. Where it's life-threatening is it can be life-threatening with delimonene.
Sure,
lion
yeah.
Lion is something that you see in the pet products that you don't see in the human products that can cause bad sensitivity reactions that are to the point of being life-threatening.
You see it in floor cleaner in human products, but not in shampoo.
Right. And so, you know, like on the one hand, they're so protective of the pets. But on the other hand, they use this, you know, natural stuff that can, that has actually had more difficult reactions than anything that you would find in human shampoos. That's where I'm at. I just boldly go, okay?
Hold that thought. We're going to take a really quick break, hear from Evolution Shears, and then Barbara's going to give us her journey into micellar water.
You know, I've been grooming for over 15 years now, and the way they have developed this with it being able to custom fit your hand, I try to go pick up any other shear now, and I say some bad words in my head because I don't want to stand on my head to scissor the inside of a leg anymore. Like, I can do everything with keeping my wrist straight, and it's made such a huge difference. Because I'm 44 now. I feel like I came into grooming late in life, and I want to be grooming as long as humanly possible because I love it. We don't realize how much bending our wrist and tweaking our bodies to get into strange positions doesn't just affect your wrist. It doesn't just affect potential carpal tunnel. It affects your shoulder and your neck and your back and your hip. And when you're having to hold yourself in a weird position to reach a place on a dog, it throws your whole body out of whack. That's why I love working with them, because I honestly love the product and I wouldn't want to groom without them. It is really, really nice in this day and age with, you know, so many huge corporations to have a mom and pop business, to have legitimately a family type business, because I feel like even though we're not blood related, I feel like I'm part of their family. And if you contact us on Facebook for a customer service issue, it's either myself or Abby. We are the customer service department. It's that kind of small business. And we really do try to keep everybody happy.
Give us all the information. Where can we find all things Evolution Shears?
All things, well, we have a Facebook page. We also have a website, evolutionshears.com. And because we love our GroomPod family, if you go on the website and put the coupon code GroomPod, you get $10 off each shear.
Groomers, take your seats. School is about to begin.
So, can I tell you where I boldly went this week?
Oh, please do. Please do.
I boldly went, speaking of human products, there's been some curiosity by our listeners about micellar water.
Yeah.
So, I had a lot of fun looking into this micellar water, because you know what? I poo-pooed. What is this? You know, I poo-pooed the micellar. When I started seeing it on the shelf,
yeah,
I just said to myself, well, no way am I going there. I kind of overcame my resistance and plunged into looking at a whole bunch of different micellar waters. So first of all, let's do a definition of micellar, having to do with or composed of micelles.
They were in there.
What do we know? I mean, we just happen to be, as groomers who have studied ingredients and the chemistry of our products, we happen to know that micelles are a key concept in shampoo action, right?
Absolutely.
They are the key way in which our surfactants clean the dirty hair and skin. So the micellar water It looks like water. It's totally clear. It's not thick. In fact, it is. In fact, they use often use an agent in there that's a thinning agent. So instead of having a gentle surfactant and a thickening agent, they have a gentle surfactant and the ingredient would be, I got it here, hexylene glycol. Hexylene glycol, I kept seeing it. I pulled off the ingredients to five or six of these micellar waters. And then I started looking at where there were some common ingredients. But here's how the micellar, the basic concept of micellar water is that oil particles are suspended in the water. I'm reading this. Therefore, making it an excellent makeup remover. It is applied to a cotton ball and pressed onto your face, not rubbed. Makeup, dirt, oil, and anything else your face is attracted to, the oils in the micellar water, while the water... Boy, that's a lousy sentence. I don't know. I either made a mistake when I copied this, but it's like making no sense. And so basically, I'll just jump to the final statement. I need to get my notes over before I start babbling them. Basically, micellar water is a makeup remover, hydrating agent, toner, and moisturizer all in one. So here when I thought it was going to be a real simple product, it's a more technological and more sophisticated and more complex product than what I thought. I thought it was going to be, they're selling me water. I'm supposed to pay $8.95 for 10 ounces of water.
With some woo-woo in it, with a little woo-woo.
Well, but you know what? There's a lot of technology that has gone into the development of these micellar waters. And one of them is there's two things about it. They contain cleansing ingredients, and usually a mild cleansing agent, like amphodiacetate, disodium cocoa amphodiacetate, or one of those, let me see if I can find another one, capric glycerides, these kind of baby shampoo mild ingredients. And then they are the key concept of micellar cleaning products is that they're clear. Because mostly when you mix surfactants and make a shampoo, it's kind of a murky mess.
Sometimes not a very pretty color either.
Yeah, sometimes not a pretty color. And that's why shampoos are colored and or pearlized, right? So the pearlescent, they'll have ingredients that give a pearly effect so that the murky mess looks luxurious. And it has more appeal in there. Put a little blue color in or whatever they're working with, pink, whatever they're working with. But you don't find any colorants. You don't find any thickeners. You don't find no pearlizing agents. And you find thinning agent like the hexylene glycol. And here's another common ingredient. You find this ingredient called poloxamer 184. Okay, I'd never heard of that. I looked up this poloxamer. So, I was expecting micellar water to be ultra-natural.
Yeah.
It ain't. Micellar water is not, they don't even try to market it as natural because it's high-tech. This poloxamer 184 is a synthetic polymer. That's a big molecule made of repeated units. That's used as a mild cleansing agent. It's also used in contact lens solutions and a regular on the ingredient list of many micellar waters. And it has an oil-loving middle surrounded by the water-loving parts. So it will grab hold of an oil and emulsify it by holding it in its middle. feels water soluble, and when it's applied, the micelles break down and deliver the glycerin or oil element in this to provide a moisturizing effect, right? So this stuff is so high tech. And Poloxamer 184 is like almost half oil and half water soluble, and it loves to form micelles. However, what's funny is that they market these micellar waters as though micelles are an ingredient.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? They definitely looks that way.
Yeah, well, let's just add 100 micelles.
Yeah.
Like I have a bottle of something that's called micelles. And I'll just, you know, like, well, do you want 2 tablespoons or let's have a whole lot of micelles. Micelles form as a result of the activity of a substance in the water. So here was a little bit of a clue where you say, where I read, it is also used in contact lens solutions.
Yeah.
So some of the technology for micellar water has been drawn from or taken from or borrowed from contact lens cleaning solutions, right? Okay, that's interesting. And then we also know that some of the technology that has been applied in micellar water is borrowed from what has been learned about making clear shampoos. When I first started in the industry, there were no clear shampoos. And that's because manufacturing clear shampoos is a advanced technology. It took a while for us to develop the ingredients and for the cosmetic chemists to be able to figure out how to formulate a clear product.
That's interesting, because we as consumers, we think of clear as being more natural than cloudy, but this is definitely not more natural at all. This is way more chemical.
Yeah, you know, like the micellar waters don't have a lot of ingredients, although there is one that I ran into called, it was made by Boscia, B-O-S-C-I-A, Boscia, sake cleansing water, like Japanese sake.
Like rice wine?
Yeah. And this, I don't have the ingredients listed, but there's 31 ingredients in that micellar water.
That's a lot.
That is not a simple product.
Nope.
But I'll read you the ingredients to the L'Oreal Paris Micellar Cleansing Water Complete Cleanser. Phew, what a name.
Yeah. Okay,
so we have water, hexylene glycol, told ya.
Yeah.
Glycerin, poloxamer 184, told ya. Disodium cocoa ethodiacetate, there's a cleansing surfactant that likes to make micelles. Disodium EDTA, that's going to be it's a chelator to keep ingredients from forming compounds with the minerals in the water. Now look at this one, polyaminopropylbiguanide. Now that's a pretty simple one, that's about the most simple one. Another one, Garnier, we like Garnier products. They have a micellar water. Theirs is water, hexylene glycol, told ya, glycerin, poloxamer 184, told ya, disodium cocoa amphodiacetate, again, disodium ETA, again, and polyaminopropylbiguanide. Okay, so that's almost the same, right?
Right.
And then you could have Bioderma has some extra ingredients like cucumber fruit extract. That's just a woo-woo spa ingredient, right? A toner. So some of their ingredients have been borrowed, captured, or used from previous generations of facial cleaners. And the thing that makes the micellar water distinct is that it's clear and it's thin. And the key to that thinness is that hexylene glycol is, you know, and you see the hexylene glycol is right after the water in these products, right?
Right.
One ingredient that we might be concerned about is this polyaminopropylbiguanide. BIGUANIDE, aka PHMB. That's the preservative. So, see, even the preservatives can make a substance cloudy or not clear. So, this is a preservative that's used in these micellar waters, and it's also used in other skin and cleaning solutions and for contact lenses. But we need to be aware of the fact that polyaminopropyl biguanide, also known as PHMB, has been restricted and banned in other countries. In the EU, PHMB was banned in personal care products after being labeled a Category 2 carcinogenic agent in 2015. So we can be sure that there's not very much of it in anything that's being sold because it's going to be restricted. And we can be aware that the EU doesn't want you using it at all. So that's iffy, an iffy ingredient. So let me tell you, I bought a package of micellar water pads, cleansing pads, the one from Burt's Bees. Because Burt's Bees, you know, they try to be natural and all of that. So I bought that, and I thought, well, maybe I can use this to, well, on my own face, for one thing, even though I'm not wearing makeup. It's not always makeup that you want to remove from your face, but sometimes when you've had a hot, sweaty day, as per lately, you might want to freshen your face with something. So I picked up the package of wipes, and I also thought I would try them as eye stain cleanser wipes for my own Maltese. And what I discovered is that I really like it. It really cleans lightly and freshens my skin without having to do a full water thing. And it does help me remove tear stain, although I'm probably going to want to use the fluid, the pure liquid, so that I can saturate the area under the eyes a little better than what you get in a pad, in a cleansing pad. May I predict something?
Predict. Go for it.
I predict that we will be seeing micellar water in the pet grooming industry within the next 2 years.
And I predict that we'll be hearing from Show Season about their hemp conditioner, and then we'll be back with our At the Table segment, which is, how do you get your clients to read book?
So, Barbara, what's new over at Show Season? I got an inkling. A little bird told me there might be something coming down the pipeline. What is it?
Yeah, I'm excited because Show Season now has hemp conditioner. So we've already reviewed and appreciated the hemp shampoo that they have. It's a non-sulfate shampoo, seems to be very mindfully formulated. And in the past, what we would do if we wanted to have additional conditioning, more serious conditioning, we would use their hypo conditioner. But now they have a conditioner that's been formulated to match up with the hemp shampoo made by the same formulator. So that's exciting. I'm looking forward to trying that. I just got wind of it, so we'll try some out and get back to you on that.
I love this about Show Season. They're always looking for ways to better the products. They're looking for new things they can infuse in there. They're so willing to work with our ideas, and they're just great people over there, aren't they?
They really are, and they really do listen to groomers, and they're always upgrading and improving and adding to, and if there's a certain fragrance that you just got to have in a shampoo, you need to tell them about it.
Yeah, that's cool because they are also environmentally thoughtful, and they're trying to keep their local sources. And yeah, no, they're great people. And if you guys want to support a great company like Show Season that supports the Groom Pod, you can do so by going to their website, showseasongrooming.com. And if you haven't already, set up your wholesale account and do that on the phone. Their phone number is 678-382-0218, or email if you already have their setup. But really, they're at lots of local distributors. They're all over the place. I think that they're at Groomers Mart, but I know that they're at Cascade Grooming Supply. Let's see what's happening at the grooming table.
Rebooking for my guys? Well, the other option is you don't get your appointment. So I generally have, I was thinking about it, and I would say that 98% of my clients book the next appointment at the time of their appointment. Sometimes the cat people don't, sometimes, because you never know when your cat's going to really want to get groomed or need grooming. And
or never.
Yes. And I would also say that 70% of my client base has a standing appointment. It's scheduled out to infinity and beyond, to use the words of a cartoon character. So I just have it every repeating every 4 weeks at the same time out forever, or 20 appointments or something like that. So I have to do it because my schedule is a nightmare. And once you get a spot, if I can get you into a regular spot, you want to keep it. So you don't cancel, you don't change. If you do, you're very gracious about it because you just want to get back on the schedule. That's how I do it in my world. But how do you do it? How do you get people to rebook?
I have somewhat the same thing. I have a demand for my services that exceeds my availability, and with exceptions. In the summer, it tends to slow down. In the fall, I start telling people, you know, like, I hope that you're willing to rebook because you might lose the opportunity. I am sometimes booked out very far in the fall and winter. But I say, you know, in order to keep this style and this grooming the way you like it, we need to do your dog on a monthly basis or a six-week basis, you know. I always say, when can we see you again? You know, when can we see you again? And I said, well, I'll give you a call. I said, yeah, okay, I'm going to take your chances.
You
know, yeah. I just kind of wag my finger at them and say, you know, like, if you want to be sure about getting in when you're ready, you might want to book now. And then I do have some that will book and then cancel at the when they get their reminder.
It happens. It's just one of the things that happens in our industry.
But I pretty well put it on a basis of, this is what it's going to take to keep your dog looking like you want him to look. And this is what it's going to take in order to keep the situation under control. If it's matting or an older dog or whatever, you know, like, I want to do groomings on my older pets that are easier on them than a whole BFD clip down or dematting. So let's just do them a little easier groom every so many weeks, you know. And sometimes I even recommend 3 weeks for some dogs.
Do you have a spot on your cards to write the next appointment? I think that's really helpful.
I have these cute little kind of stickies that I'll write their appointment down, and then I give them the sticky, and then they can just go stick it on their refrigerator, stick it in their book, put it in their checkbook, whatever. You know, so I hand it to them on a little written sticky. I used to use the business cards, which are good, but I just don't have the money for business cards right now. So this stick-em thing, they're really liking it, you know?
Cool.
Sometimes I stick it right to them, you know, like, here you go.
I use the cards with the appointment line for all kinds of communication with them. I use it to write on the price raises and things like that. If I've got an unusual day, I'll write that on there. I hand them the appointment card with their next appointment. I don't do a lot of new people, so on that very first appointment for the new people, because as Barbara has disclosed to me and everybody else, I don't like new people because they don't love me yet. So when I go to a new appointment, I don't book their second appointment. First of all, I don't know how long it's going to be. Second of all, I don't deal well with rejection, so I don't pre-book that appointment. But after that, I let them know at the time of their service that I normally will assign your next appointment to you at this time, but for your first appointment, I don't deal with rejection, so we'll just call me when you're ready, and if I don't hear from you, then we don't have to deal with rejection.
But Susie, come
it's on. Part of my charm.
That's just assuming you're going to have rejection.
No, I don't.
What if they want to book?
Well, I'll let them
for their next appointment.
Then they fight for it, and I let them do it. So if they want to book their next appointment, I absolutely will book the next appointment. But I don't force it where I kind of do force it for everybody else. Because to make my schedule work, I kind of have to do it that way.
I am fairly assertive about it.
Yeah.
I become fairly assertive about it. And I know those few customers that I have that have such an erratic life that they can't pre-book. I have about five of them. I have a truck driver. I have a first responder. I have women who travel more than I work. You know, and I, even the traveling woman, because we couldn't get her in on time, and Oompa.
Yes.
Oompa had to go too long and got pretty messy and everything, and had to have a shortcut. Boy, one of those incidents, and then she started making sure her daughter could bring the dog.
Yeah.
You know, like she got herself some backup to keep the regular appointments because they really want Oompa to have some hair.
Oompa's style. Oompa has a style.
It has a look, and it requires hair.
Yes, it does. So I think that if you do pre-book the majority of your clients like I do and like Barbara does, you have to give them a reminder call or a reminder text or something like that, because you're shooting your own foot right off if you don't do it.
Oh, yeah. Amen to that, Susie, because we run into groomers who say, well, I'm not their babysitter. You know, I have to remember my massage appointment. They have to remember their grooming appointment. No, no, no. That is old school thinking. That is outdated. Reminders work. We live in a complex world, and people, there's 100 different reasons people can forget an appointment. And you just got to support them. It's not taking on a job that you shouldn't have to do. It's providing follow-up support so that you minimize the appointment failures.
I always joke that to pre-book your appointment, the incentive is that I will show up for your appointment. That's the incentive. If you pre-book the appointment, I'll be there. How's that? But sometimes people feel, people sometimes need a little motivator, if you will. So people will try to discount. I'm not a big fan of discounting for rewards. I would prefer to give an additional service.
Extra.
Up something. Like I'll give Buffy a facial because you always keep your appointment and you let me pre-book. Something like that. Don't go for the discount. Go for the incentive that offers something special.
You can do a spa treatment or a skin treatment or something like that. You know, and I know people include those services in their package. I have a tendency to do that. But you can always keep something on the side. For a long time, I used teeth brushing and breath freshening. I just got tired of doing it. It's my hands.
Yeah.
I have to, you know, like I just have to eliminate, reduce the things that are stressful to my hands. I wish I could stop doing toenails. I would just give anything. I'd give my left boobie to be able to. I would. Off with it. You know, I'll be one-sided. I don't care. Just take this off my table. I would do anything.
Won't require that. We're not going to require removal of boobies for the keeping the grooming appointment. Pardon the interruption, but I completely forgot to include my favorite rebooking incentive, and that's the Rebookie Cookie. That's where you give a big size cookie for anyone who rebooks their appointment. So that's it. The Rebookie Cookie is my favorite incentive. My best advice is to be flexible on cancellations if you're going to book people 8, 9, 10, 12 weeks out. You're going to want to be flexible. So do those reminder calls, but make it work for you and make it work for them. Make it work for everybody. We're going to wrap this up because we are done. I think we've talked enough. What do you think, hey?
Hey, I think we've beat this horse to death.
You say that. My horse gets offended every time.
Well, let's put a fork in it.
All right. I love that one. It's a done deal. Thanks for being here, guys. We appreciate it ever so much. We appreciate your support on Patreon and for you guys to shop through our Amazon banner on our website. And happy grooming, guys. We'll see you next week on the Groom Pod. Bye-bye now.
Take care of yourselves and stay cool.
Well, stylists, it's time to sweep up the hair, clean out the tub, and turn out the lights on another episode of The Groom Pod. Remember to join the discussion group and be part of the show by liking us on Facebook at The Groom Pod. You can find Barbara online at groomblog.blogspot.com and at her shopping site, www.shop.bbird.biz. You can email me at Susie, S-U-S-Y, at thegroompod.com or Barbara@thegroompod.com. Please tell all your friends about the show and leave comments and reviews anywhere that you can. And also, please support the sponsors of the show. They make it possible for us to continue on. So on behalf of Barbara Bird and myself, thanks for listening and see you real soon.